opening this weekend at the Gonzaga Theater at Gonzaga University, the Magnuson Theater right there on campus, is the play Tick, Tick, Boom by Jonathan Larson. There's musical components to this play, and we're going to learn a lot about the play, the musical parts of it, and a lot of the production parts of it from the folks from Gonzaga who are here. But since it does have a musical component, then let's go to our studio where we'll hear Nathan Patrick Nelson singing in the role of John, also playing the piano at the same time, Rachel Armstrong in the role of Michelle, and Jackie Bertinoli as in the role of Susan, as they sing a song which is called Sunday. So to our studio and a song from the play Tick, Tick, Boom.
Sunday in the blue silver chromium diner, on the green purple yellow red stools sit the fools who should eat at home. Instead they pay on Sunday for a cool orange juice or bagel on the soft green cylindrical stools sit the fool drinking cinnamon coffee or decaffeinated tea. Chromium diner drips a green, orange, violet drool from the fools who would pay less at home drinking coffee light and dark and cholesterol. Bums, 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 bums.
People
bums
screaming for their
toast in a small Soho cafe on an island in two rivers on an ordinary Sunday.
From our studio, Sunday, from the play Tick, Tick, Boom, sung for us by Jackie Bertinoli, Rachel Armstrong, and Nathan Patrick Nelson, who was also at the piano. The director of the play from the Gonzaga faculty, Courtney Smith. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning.
And let's jump right in on this play, Tick, Tick, Boom, and kind of what it is, and especially what the musical implications of this play are.
Yeah, sure. So Tick, Tick, Boom, written by Jonathan Larson, is really about his own personal discovery and kind of deciding whether or not to give up his dream of writing the next big musical, or accepting a corporate office job and selling out and accepting a less fulfilling choice in life.
That's perfect. And so you do that at a college where everybody decides whether to major in the things they want to do or the things their parents told them was going to make them a living.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we're done with that interview. Well, let's jump right in on that, on the people who are involved. First, let's find out each of you. Jackie Bertinoli? Mm-hmm. And in the role of Susan, who is Susan in this play?
John's girl.
girlfriend, and she is kind of struggling with a similar thing as John is, where she's a dancer, and her dream was always to become a dancer, and she's kind of, in a way, sold out herself and is teaching kids who can't dance and is really ready to get out of the city and move somewhere else and is trying to figure out what role John will play in her next steps in life.
Okay, then John's turn to kind of answer back as the other part of that duel, Nathan Patrick Nelson. As John, what's your part in this?
Yeah, so I play John, which is based on Jonathan Larson. So
the writer of the whole
show.
Yeah, the
writer. So it was originally a one-man show that he wrote 5 years before he wrote Rent and 6 years before he died. And so it's basically chronicling a point in his life on his 30th birthday where he was dealing with all this anxiety about what to do with his life. And so it's kind of a snapshot of this turning point where either John could give up and easily go into marketing and sell out, or he can really dig in and start writing musicals. And thank God he did, because we got Rent from it. And so this is kind of an interesting point to see where he got that energy from and that spark from to continue to write the piece he'd eventually end up winning the Pulitzer Prize for.
Yeah, okay. And then Rachel Armstrong, how does Michelle play into this whole issue of what to do with your life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Michelle is John's best friend, and she used to be an actress, but she decided to leave the musical theater world to join corporate America so that she could make more money. And she sees John struggling with his writing and composing, so she really wants to bring him into the corporate world, knowing that you can make a lot of money from it, and she just wants to see him be successful. So all of the efforts she makes are just all out of support.
Now we're at always that dicey point in an interview, because we don't want to give away how this is going to happen. But I want to carry the conversation a little farther from any of the three of you. How has doing this play fit into your own thoughts of what you're doing with your life? Who wants to jump into that one?
It's especially Nathan. Relevant, like, about to graduate. Jackie and I are both seniors, and I think thinking about this play in the terms of being thrust into the real world is pretty terrifying. Looking at, you know, whether or not I'm going to go take teaching jobs or just go and audition or, you know, just, quote, big, bold, air quotes, sell out is kind of on, I think, every senior's mind at this point, and everyone at any point in their life where they feel like they have to make such a big decision about what they're going to do forever. And it's kind of terrifying that, at least for me, I feel like, why do I have to make these decisions when I'm 21 years old? Like, gosh, I don't know what shirt I'm going to wear in the morning. How am I supposed to make these decisions about what I'm going to do with the rest of my life? And I think that's exactly what John is going through. He just happens to be 30, which I don't know if that terrifies me about turning 30 in 10 years or it makes it easier, but it's definitely helped me think about it.
Yeah. And Jackie, what do you think? Yeah. Because you're also a senior.
Yeah. I think also Nathan and I are both theater major seniors, and the show is very relevant in terms of figuring out what we're going to do next. And I think we both would say these characters are very similar to us, and we see a lot of ourselves within John and Susan, and looking forward to, you know, the next 10 years of our lives, seeing what we're going to basically look like in 10 years is kind of a scary thing, but it's helped me discover a lot about how I feel about my dreams as a theater artist and kind of what I want to do going forward from here.
And then there's the underlayment that I presume that given Gonzaga tuition, there might be a little student debt along the way somewhere here. And Rachel, do you want to jump in on this? What year in school are you?
I'm a freshman.
Oh, you're
you're
watching those seniors freak out.
I know.
While you have 3 years of paradise in front of you.
Yeah, I think same thing. I find a strong connection with Michelle because I'm a nursing major, so I know.
Oh, yeah, but you're going for a real job.
Oh, my gosh.
I can say this. I've spent my whole life in the arts.
So at the end of college, hopefully, I'll end up being a nurse. But I definitely found with Michelle somebody who just completely left the musical theater world to basically make more money. I found that I really just want to find a way to balance my passion with my career. So I still want to find a way to always do musical theater, and like doing it in college is a great way because you can still kind of balance schoolwork before you like go out in the real world and have to pursue a job. But I want to do theater as long as I can, and as much as I can. So, mm-hmm.
And there are four more people in the room that we'll get to in a minute who also are all involved with this and have opinions on this. But Tessa, I want to bring you in here because this is really an interesting role you've had. You've understudied both these roles.
Yes.
Talk about what this is Tessa Singer. Talk about what that's like.
It's very interesting because I walk into rehearsal not knowing whether Jackie or Rachel is going to be there. And usually they are, but so I have to be prepared to perform for both and know all their blocking and dancing. And so I'm juggling a lot, but it's really taught me a lot about how everything works backstage. And it's a great introduction to the program without fully getting like super into it, I guess.
What year in school are you?
I'm a freshman.
You're
too.
Also a freshman. Okay, that's perfect. And then we shouldn't even talk about the fact that you they're your friends and you wish them well, but you secretly hope that somebody will.
Somebody
will get laryngitis, and you hope that they won't both get laryngitis at the same time.
Oh yeah, you know, it's just always in my prayers, always.
of the understudies, think, because of course that's. That's essential. The show must go on. And that back to Courtney, the director, isn't that every drama production's deadly fear? Because you usually, in less than professional theater, don't have understudies, and you just hope.
Yeah, I just have a lot of faith in Tessa, and she's shown up every day, fully prepared, mm-hmm. as understudies do. Mm-hmm. So a big shout out to Tessa for really filling in both of those roles, because it's not easy figuring out motivations for both characters and choreography and just simple getting off of lines and having that memorized. So she's done a fantastic job.
Plus to have a split personality.
Yeah.
Good. Well, these are the onstage people. Let's send two of you back for another song. This is going to be Nathan and Jackie. Nathan, who play the couple in the show, John and Susan, who are the couple in the show, and they'll go back to our studio, and we'll get another song. Then we'll spend some time talking about the underbody, the real production of any show. So this is the song Therapy. Courtney, anything? Will the song explain itself?
It's so this song is really about John and Susan. We get a good snapshot of what their relationship is at this point of the show, and truly about miscommunication. You'll just have to listen.
Okay, here we go. The song Therapy from the show Tick, Tick, Boom, which opens at Gonzaga this Thursday.
I feel bad that you feel bad about me feeling bad about you feeling bad about what I said about what you said about me not being able to share a feeling.
If I thought that what you thought was that I hadn't thought about sharing my thoughts, then my reaction to your reaction, to my reaction, would have been more revealing.
I was afraid that you'd be afraid if I told you that I was afraid of intimacy. Well, if you don't have a problem with my problem, maybe the problem's simply codependency.
Yes, I know that now you know that I didn't know that you didn't know that when I said no, I meant yes, I know. And that now I know that you knew that I knew you adored me.
I was wrong to
say you were wrong to
say I was wrong about
you being wrong
when I rang to say that
the ring was the wrong thing to bring.
If I meant what I said when I said rings bored me, I'm not mad that you got mad when I got mad when you said I should go drop dead. If I were you and I'd done what I'd done, I'd do what you did when I gave you the ring, having said what I said. I'm not mad that you got mad about me being mad about you being mad about what I said about what you said about me not being able to share a feeling. I thought I reacted shallowly when I reacted to you.
I'm not mad that you got mad when you said I should go drop dead.
If I were you and I'd done what I'd done, I'd do what you did when I gave you the ring, having said what I said. But now it's out in the open.
Now it's off our chest.
Now it's 4 a.m. and we have therapy tomorrow. It's too late to screw, so let's just get some rest.
From the show Tick, Tick, Boom, we were just hearing the song Therapy, sung by Nathan Patrick Nelson as John and Jackie Bertinoli as Susan. Boyfriend, girlfriend in the show. Let's move into the production people. And even as the three of you come up, what that song reminds me of is those 2-hour cups of coffee in courtship courtship times and trying to figure it all out. But anyway, introduce us to the concept, if you will, Courtney, of really expanding your theater education to deep production.
Yeah, so
because that also being your deep specialty.
Yeah, so my emphasis in theater is design. I got the great opportunity to direct this show, which opened up the floor for student designers on the Magnuson stage for the first time in many, many years.
Because you didn't have to do it.
So I didn't have to
do it.
And so we had a great production creative team to join us, and I feel like we kind of created a stellar all-star design team.
Okay, let's quickly meet you and then find out how each of you melded into this. Grady Foster, you're a set designer. Have you done? Does that fit with what you do? Are you really great at rebuilding your kitchen or something like that?
Well, I love construction, so that was fun. But no, I had never done set design before. I took a class with Courtney last fall, I believe, design process. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of got my first taste of what it was to be on the design side of theater. Theater was fairly new to me. I only started really my senior year of high school, so I'd never been around it before. So when Courtney offered me the opportunity to design a set, I was really excited. And really interested to kind of take the theater route from a different perspective, finding a different mental space to be in.
Nice. And Regina Carrere, costume designer, just the way you appear right now on Halloween and everything. You're not in a Halloween costume, but you clearly have a sense of fashion or sense. Have you always had that sense of how to appear and how to look and what to wear and stuff like that?
I think so. I actually didn't get into costume design until my freshman year, and I kind of just stumbled on a costume shop assistant position at GU. I had no sewing experience, but I always love putting together outfits. I always had my own Halloween costume, and then from my freshman year all the way to my senior year today, I've been working in the GU theater department in the costume shop mostly.
Nice. And Clint Bull, you're the lighting designer. Does that fit any of your background?
Kind of. Much like Grady, I only really got into theater towards the tail end of high school, but I always loved doing the backstage tech type stuff. And last spring, I also took a class from Courtney, which was for lighting design. And in that class, we got to design a few pieces for the Gonzaga's dance concerts. And it was so fun, and I just found out that I absolutely loved it. So when Courtney gave me the opportunity to be the lighting designer for this, I was thrilled.
So lighting, costume, and set design on a show. I want to try here on radio to reconstruct what happened early in the process. You were presented with a play, and you had to suddenly decide what it was going to look like. if anybody wants to jump in, if Courtney, you want to say how you started that out, is there a science to that? Everybody has to read the play and come up with an idea and then meet and fight over it, or how does this work?
Yeah, so, I mean, I teach a class called Design Process, and we really kind of break down design meetings and what happens in each design meeting. So there's definitely a phase that happens. So we started that back in April, I think, our first meeting, and I kind of talked with the design team about overall vision, concept, you know, the set, the musical is set in 1990. We're going to keep it in 1990. And from there, we just had our design meetings happen. In each step of the way, we added a new element to it.
Mm-hmm. And so anybody want to jump in on where in that process an idea came along, or an idea you liked that you got talked out of, or an idea that you convinced them of, or I don't know, do you have any examples like that?
Yeah, so one of the things that we did in our first design meeting was we did what's called an emotional response, and basically we read the show and then we created some sort of physical representation of how we felt after reading. In mine, I went and I got this lovely little cupcake from the grocery store, and I put about 30 candles on it because John's turning 30, and I lit them all and I let them all melt all the way down and kind of burn out. And that was my reaction, I guess, to the show, and this idea of John not wanting to blow out those candles and not wanting to accept this idea of, you know, air quotes, of growing up. And so that's when I was kind of struck with this idea of creating a playground of sorts. New York is, you know, we look at it with these rose-colored glasses of it is the playground. It is this larger-than-life place where you go and play. And so I wanted to create that feeling while also making it feel very real. And so I went with this idea of fire escapes and ladders and adding all of this elevation. I believe it's the largest set we've ever created. Yeah. And we have varying levels of staircases and platforms to play on.
Yeah, that's Grady, the set designer. Either of you have any stories from the process? Yeah, Regina, the costume designer.
Yeah, one of the challenges with costumes for this play is we have three actors on stage, but a multitude of characters throughout the play. So not only a challenge for the actors, but for costume, was figuring out how can we convey that this actor is now a different character within the span of a few seconds sometimes. And with that, it can get sort of clunky transition-wise. So a lot of this process has been like, yes, it would be great to have a hat and an apron for someone working in a diner, but realistically, they don't have time to put on both, so we'll have to cut a few things here and there. And even now, that process is still going on as we're in dress rehearsals.
And to see what'll work, because if we see one of the fancy Broadway productions and know that that was probably a $10,000 costume that could immediately be ripped away and transformed into something else, and the audience gasps and all that stuff. So the lighting designer, do you get to have initiative or say, or do you just have to make what they tell you to do happen? How's that for
a little bit of column A, yeah, a little bit of column B? For lighting design, what's of course most important is that you can see the actors, and one of the biggest challenges is trying to balance like having fun and cool looking lights, especially for a musical, and still being able to see the actors' faces clearly. Like my whole sort of guiding thought throughout this, designing this show was, that for regular dialogue, it's like neutral lights. Everything is kind of just normal, no color. But then when the music hits, it gets super bright, super colorful, lots of bold colors. And, I guess, yeah, the biggest challenge was, not washing out those colors during the songs, but still making sure you can see the actors. So there's definitely like a lot of creativity that goes with that, but there are a lot of tweaks that we've had to make over the past couple of rehearsals, like, oh, I can't see Nathan, he's too dark right here, so we have to bring that light up and stuff like that.
And then the Magnuson Theater, which is not theater in the round, but theater in the three quarters or something like that, presents unique challenges, doesn't it, for everybody?
Well, certainly, yeah. I think probably mostly for Clint as a lighting designer. You know, it's an unusual space. It's a fantastic space. It's really tall, which kind of creates obstacles and then adding Grady's scaffolding and big structure that he has to light basically three different levels. So they all kind of created challenges for each other, but they have certainly met those challenges.
Nice. So an overview of the Gonzaga Theater Department and the many, many sides of what makes this show happen. Tick, Tick, Boom by Jonathan Larson, which is Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week and next week at 7:30, and then a Sunday matinee each week at 2 o'clock, the standard playtimes in this town. So it's two full weeks of Thursday through Sunday, the Magnuson Theater. So thank you, everybody, for spending the morning with me.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Okay,
the cast and crew of Gonzaga's Tick, Tick, Boom.